we're in Romans. I would say chapter 2, but we're kind of hung in limbo between chapter 1 and 2. Question for you. By the way, I got a note this morning via computer that this class is, people are watching this class in Cambodia. So turn around and say hello to the folks in Cambodia, to the camera back there, all right? And there are other places that are too, but that one really struck me as being pretty neat. So, question for you. Shouldn't start off this heavy because your mind's not here. But get all your talking over with and look up here. Pardon? Well, I need more than that. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? Now, you really do need to think about that question. And it's real easy to give it an answer, or maybe it's not for you, but it tends to be real easy to give it an answer. But give it an answer that you're going to live with. Jesus said, the Son of Man came to seek and save that which is lost. I take him at his word. And if man is lost, if man is lost without Jesus, that has lots of implications. If he's not lost, that has lots of implications. And among those implications, some of the implications, if he is lost without Jesus, if Jesus had never come to this earth and man, in fact, would be lost and is lost, then that says, among other things, that the gospel has nothing to do with the person being lost. And so when somebody says, why is a person lost, and you start talking about because they haven't obeyed the gospel or because they haven't been baptized or because they don't come to church or because they don't take the Lord's Supper, that's not true. Man would be lost if there was no church, if there was no cross, if there was no Jesus, if there was no Lord's Supper, if there was no baptism, man would be lost. And so that's not why he's lost. Now, folks, that's not a fine line. Some people start trying to think about that and they say, that's too fine a line. No, it's not. I maintain that the Bible says that if Jesus had never come to this earth, all men would be lost. Now, that's not a very popular thing, and certainly the obvious implications and necessary inferences from that are not popular for our world today, for our I'm okay, you're okay world today. So what's going to happen to those folks that have never responded to the gospel, who are still living as if Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, either because they haven't heard the gospel or because they heard the gospel and rejected it? What's going to happen to them? Until you come to the realization that they're lost, and until you get that firmly implanted in your mind, then you don't understand and won't appreciate the gospel. You certainly won't appreciate the necessity of the gospel. And if man is not lost, if, as we tend to want to answer that question by saying, well, when somebody says, well, what's going to happen to this person who never heard the gospel, this person who's apart from Christ, this person who lives under law, what's going to happen to him? If your answer is, well, God is a God of love and he's going to take care of that, then you're dodging the issue. You didn't answer the question. You still didn't say what's going to happen. we tend to want to say that and leave it there. But that's not where the Bible leaves it. And if it's true that you hold out some hope for a person who's not heard the gospel or who lives under law, I shouldn't even bring up not heard the gospel, because that hadn't got anything to do with why a person's lost. It has everything to do with how he gets saved, but it has nothing to do with how he got lost. There is a difference. And we've thrown those two things in the same mix and mixed them all up so that we answer one question by throwing in part of some oranges with the apples. But if it is true that a person apart from Christ, a person who lives under law, if he's okay, then let me make a real sincere personal plea to you. Leave him alone. Don't take him to gospel. Because what's going to happen to him if you take him to gospel and he rejects it? What's going to happen to him then? You just got him lost, didn't you? And if he was okay without it, then why in the world would you want to tell him the gospel, because he might reject it and be lost? And so how does that fit in with God's plan for salvation for man? If man is okay without the gospel, then don't take it to him, because he might reject it. And after all, if he's okay, what are you offering him? What do you have to offer him? A better lifestyle? Is that what Jesus Christ came to offer the world? My Bible teaches me that he came to a world that was dead and lost and without hope in sin. And he came to offer life. Now, Romans 1:18 to 3:20 is not a very pleasant topic. It's talking about how we try to be saved by keeping law. And that's what we've been looking at. Romans chapter 1 talked about the steps. You remember that the sequential departure that man takes from God? Let's not have to go back over that, but if you weren't here for that, then get the tape. And now, before we go into chapter 2, and chapter 2 is going to tell us, how is God going to judge a person who lives under law, who has never heard about Jesus Christ? He's never heard the gospel. He's never heard about baptism. He's never heard about the church. How's God going to judge that person, this person who's living under law? Chapter 2 is going to tell us that. But we got some, at least I feel like, some things that we have to go through to prepare us for that, because that's a really, really hard lesson. And we have to talk about law. Because, you see, whenever somebody starts talking about, well, do you think you're going to go to heaven? And they start talking about, yeah, because I've done this and I'm better. And we start talking about how good this person is or how good I am or whatever. Then we're appealing to law. When it centers around me and what I've done and what I'm doing, then that's talking about law. I'm trying to be good enough. And are there lots of sincere people that are trying to be good enough to go to heaven? Sure there are. There are lots and lots and lots and lots of people who are trying to be good enough to go to heaven. But you know what? You can't be good enough to go to heaven. Neither can I. You couldn't before, you can't now, and you never will be able to. And let's talk about why. Let's talk about law. We talked about it some last time. We talked about two different ways that the Bible uses the term works, and that would be in conjunction with trying to live under and be justified by law. We talked about how that there's a set of passages that seem to teach that works have nothing to do with salvation. Justification is by grace through faith apart from works of law. And there's another set of passages that seem to indicate that works are necessary part of our salvation. And so we have two camps in Christianity today. We have one camp that holds to these passages that says it's by faith alone, and another group that says, well, you got to add works to this. And so we have two camps, They get together, they try to talk, and never the twain shall meet. I don't know what your passages mean, but I know what my passages mean. And so, you know, I'll let you have those, and I'll take these. And that's where we've been. But I'm telling you, there's a solution to that. And the solution is to understand that the term works is used in two distinctly different ways in the Bible. Now, again, get the CD from last time. Or go online and listen to it, whatever. But there's one way that the Bible uses the term works is something that has nothing to do with salvation. It's not of works, lest any man should boast. There's another way that the Bible uses the term works that says, you see then how that when his works are coupled with his faith, then his faith is made complete. James chapter 2. And James chapter 2 is ours. I mean, we've claimed it. We've got our flag stuck in it. And we're never going to give that one up because it says faith plus works equals salvation, right? Wrong. It does not say that. We've said it says that, but it doesn't say that. It says faith plus works equals faith. Complete faith. Whole faith. And so what James does is he gives us a biblical definition of what faith is. Faith is a belief plus works equals a whole faith. If you have a belief that does not have works, then you have a dead faith. But if you have a belief that has works, then you have a whole faith, a complete faith, a faith that saves, a faith that puts you in a position so that God can give you his righteousness imputed as a gift. So what we have from our study last week is we have a biblical definition of what faith is. And so from now on, when we go in the book of Romans and the book of Galatians, and it will say that we're saved by faith, then let's not have to say, but he's not talking about faith only, and go to James chapter 2. Because my whole life, that's what we did. We would be studying, if we ever studied the book of Romans, we would study, and we'd come to a passage like that, and that ended our study in Romans because the rest of the class period was trying to prove that he didn't mean what he said. He said we're saved by faith. And we're trying to make sure that people understand he's not saying by belief alone. And we go to James chapter 2. So every time we studied Romans, we ended up in James. And that's where we ended. And we learned a lot about what he didn't say. But our problem is, we never did get back to it to find out what he was saying. What was he saying when he said that? And I'm telling you, the truth that's incorporated in what he was saying is the greatest truth that you'll ever learn in your life. And I've told you in lesson number one, I fought this for a long time. I fought it hard. I fought it like a wildcat. It made me angry. But I couldn't get around it. And when I finally allowed myself to entertain the idea that the Bible might be teaching the truth, it was like somebody took 1,000 pounds off my shoulders. Because I'd been trying to be good enough to go to heaven. And I knew that I wasn't, but I had to act like I was. And that's pretty miserable. And in order to make sure that I was, I had to criticize you. I had to pick fault with you. Because, you see, I had to get myself in the top 10% somehow, because God's going to grade on the curve, after all. And so I had to criticize. I had to be critical. And I was more critical of my brethren than I was anybody else, because maybe I was afraid they were the closest. They were the ones that I really had to, turns out, they kind of were my enemies. How sick is that? How weird is that? That the people that are on my side, I have to keep making sure that you get put down. And so, we as preachers, we preach lessons, and people would come out, and we just peeled hide. And people would come out, and they would say, thank you for that lesson. used to have terms, I guess we still do, for people like that. They're called sadistic. You appreciate somebody putting a whip on your back and just beating the hide off of you. And you feel like you've taken your whipping for the day and or for the week, and now you're good to go for another week. Boy, you really stepped on my toes this time. Thank you. You know what? Sometimes we need more than our toes. If we're stepping on toes, we're not doing too good. We need to be aiming at the heart. And if sometimes we get hurt in the heart, that's a good thing if we need to. But you're not my enemy, and I'm not your enemy. And we're not in competition with one another. And I don't have to beat you. I don't have to be better than you. And that makes all the difference in the world. I don't have to be better than anybody else. He didn't say, he's not saving me because I'm better than anybody else. I'm saved because I have God's righteousness as a gift that he gave to me. And it doesn't detract from my salvation if I share that news with you and you have that righteousness. It just makes it that much sweeter and that much better that I've got people who are in the same, we're in the same boat and we're aiming toward the same place. And we can encourage one another. And it makes it that much sweeter. But if you've been living under law your whole life and somebody offers you that ride in that boat, it's hard to get in that boat. I know. I know. And so what we're doing in 118 to 320 is what I want to do is I want to build you a new house. And in order to do that, I have to tear your old house down. And I know what that feels like. Somebody comes with a bulldozer and they tell you they're going to push your house down. You might know that it's not a very good house. You might know, in fact, that it's a little old shack. But it's all you got. And what are you going to do? You're going to say, over my dead body, you're going to get it. And you know, that may not be too bad a little euphemism. Maybe it has to be over our dead body. But I will say this to you. Don't give up anything because Ken Stegall said it. That's not good enough reason. If it's not in that book, then just say, well, you know, he's sincere, but he's wrong. So we're looking at a person who's trying to be justified. By the way, what does justified mean? We throw out a lot of terminology. We have more religious terminology than we realize we do. What does justified mean? I'll refer you back to some lessons before. There was a series of lessons that I had that was entitled, I wrote it down somewhere. Four Views of the Cross. We talked about those 18-wheeler words. You remember? Justification, sanctification, glorification. We talked about, actually I started out with four and I think ended up with five. Justification is a legal term. It came from the courtroom. Justification means you're standing before the judge and he's got all the evidence and you are dead spot on guilty. And he has every evidence in the world to prove it and there's not one defense that you have. You are guilty. You have been convicted of it, and the judge has taken all the evidence in. You know what the verdict is going to be, and he raises his gavel, and he hits, and he says, not guilty. That's justification. Now, did you deserve it? What are you going to claim that you deserved it? He had all the evidence. I mean, he caught you with your hand in the cookie jar over and over and over and over again. And there were lots of witnesses. And it didn't matter if there are any witnesses or not, because God is the witness. And you're guilty, and you know it, and you've been convicted of it, and all the evidence is there, and it's just piled up so that there's not a thing in the world. You don't have any defense. Any defense that you offer has been taken away from you. And the gavel falls, and he says, not guilty. That's justification. To be treated as if you're not guilty. just if I'd never sinned before. Justification. Remember that one. To be treated just if I'd never sinned. How would you like to be convicted from the judge of heaven of sin that means eternal punishment? And then when he slams the gavel down and the verdict is in, he says, not guilty. Well, how in the world could that be? You see, the judge is righteous. He can't do that, can he? How can he just ignore it? He didn't. He punished your sin. He punished it adequately on the cross. And if you don't have gratitude for that, then there's nothing I can do to help you, and nothing God can do to help you. And if that doesn't motivate you to live your life following Him, then nothing's going to motivate you. But you have to understand how hopeless you are. As long as you hold any hope out that you're good, or you're kind of good, or you're a little bit good, and you're that turtle on the post, and you think you climbed 2 inches off the ground and you got that much on your own before somebody came along and helped you, then you don't understand the gospel. You can't get off the ground. I don't care how many good things you did. I don't care how hard you try. I don't care how many scratches you put on that post to try to climb it. You, as a turtle, can't get off the ground. And if you're on that post, nobody helps you. Somebody picks you up and puts you up there. So, we're talking about law. What's the purpose of law? What is law? Well, law is a system of deeds or observances to control people's behavior. It's setting the fences. It's the difference between right and wrong. And as long as you set the fences here, then as long as you stay within the fences, then you're okay with the law. Once you step over the fence, then the law says you're going to be punished. But as long as you stay within the fences, you're cool. That's what law does. It is to control people's behavior. And by the way, the Bible tells us that the law was not made for righteous people. The law was made for sinners. And it goes on and lists who some of those sinners are. You know, if you have multiple children, there are some of your children that very likely all you have to do to correct their behavior is look at them. And they instantly straighten up and fly right. But there's others of them, you can look at them till your eyeballs drop out, and it's not going to make any difference. They're going to look right back at you, aren't they? And if you look at them long enough, they'll be looking at you and easing over the fence. Won't they? And so the law is not made for people who want to please God. It's made for people who want to displease, who want to please ourselves, and who want to do our own thing. Let's let the Bible tell us what the purpose of law is. Somebody turn to Romans chapter 7, verse 13 for me. Somebody else turn to Galatians 3:24. We've got other passages, but these will illustrate it. Romans 7:13. Who's got it? Somebody, come on. Out of 150, 175 people, nobody's got it? Go ahead. Okay, so he said, then did that which is good become death unto me? What is it that is good? We'll look up at the verse before that. The law is holy and righteous. The commandment is holy, righteous, and good. So he's talking about the law, right? So he's asking the question then, did that which is good, the law, then become death unto me? By no means. Here, we're trying to figure out, when we get to Romans chapter 7, we're trying to figure out, well, what's the whole problem of all this? How do we get in such a mess? And one of our answers, our first answer is going to be, the law did this to me. It's because of the law that I'm in this mess. He said, did that which is good become death unto me? God forbid. No, law is not the problem. He says, but in order, what does the law do? In order that sin might be recognized as sin. That's what the law does. Because if we don't have the law, or we don't have a law, then we're going to say, I'm okay, you're okay. And it's not really that bad. You know, it's not really adultery. It's just having an affair. It's not really telling a lie. It's just stretching the truth a little bit. And he says, in order that sin might appear as sin. That's what the law does. The law doesn't cut you any slack. It says it. That's the way it is. And he says, so that through the commandment, sin might become, it produced death in me. It would that let you know that it's pretty serious? You've been saying, no big deal. Everybody does it. Okay, everybody dies. Well, where'd you get that? That's what the law says. But what if everybody does it? Then everybody dies. That's what the law does. It makes sin, it calls it what it is. And he says, so that through the commandment, sin might become utterly sinful. So what purpose does the law serve? It tells you what sin is. Because we keep pushing those fences until we get them laid down. And there ain't no fences. And you do what you want to, and I'll do what I want to, and you take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and I'll meet you in heaven. We'll both get there, and we're all both okay. Is that what the world teaches? Yes, it's what the world teaches. And then whenever you bring a standard in, somebody is going to say, yeah, I know. Somebody's going to bring this conversation something from the Bible. You people. You people. Yeah. The Bible sets a standard. And the Bible's still the same. And the standard is the same for this generation that it was for last generation, that it was for last generation, that it was for last generation, that it was for last generation. It's still the same, isn't it? And Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And God is the same. He's the Alpha and the Omega. And he doesn't change. And the world tries to change him and tries to change the standard, but that doesn't change the standard. If that's what we're going to be judged by, the words that God has given us, if that's what we're going to be judged by, then it would be pretty smart of us to understand what the judgment standard is, wouldn't it? And not ignore it and act like it's something other than what it is. Because we don't have the right to tell God how he's going to judge us. God is the judge, and he's the one who's going to judge us. Then one more. Who's got Galatians? Anybody turn to Galatians 3:24? Okay, right here. Okay, so it said the law was a schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. Somebody tell me how the law served. And by the way, just to kind of set the stage, that word, Greek word, is pedagogos. You probably heard this before. And it literally translates a child leader. And in Greek society, a family that could afford one, they had, we would say today, a nanny. But they had a full-time nanny. And when that child was, from the time that child was weaned, then they hired this person to take care of all of this child's needs. Physically, emotionally, educationally, to make sure that that child was fed properly, that they got the right amount of rest, that they got their education, to get them to school, to pick them up, to keep them safe. It was their full responsibility. That was a pedagogos. He says the law, God put the law as a pedagogos for us. For what purpose? Whenever that child became of mature age, of majority age, no longer a minor, then that pedagogos had done his job. His job was over. When is the law that God put as our pedagogos, when is his job over? When we come to Christ, his job is over. How does he bring us to Christ? What does the law do to bring us to Christ? Well, the law teaches us the difference between right and wrong, doesn't it? Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And whenever you do something wrong, then the pedagogos disciplines you, right? But let me tell you what the discipline is under the law. What is transgression of law? What the Bible has the term for? It's called what? Sin. The wages of sin is death. Wait now. We're not talking about spanking. We're not even talking about a whooping. We're talking about threat of death. I mean imminent threat of death. That once you make one mistake, your pedagogos says you're going to die. And we say, whoa, 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 wait a minute. This wasn't that bad. You know, this was just a little fib that I told. This really doesn't call for me to die. And you start trying to reason. The law says you are going to die. And you say, well, I'll be good. I promise you, I won't ever do that anymore. And the law says, good. But you're still going to die. And we say, but that's not fair. I'm sorry that I did that. And the law says, that's good. But you're still going to die. And you say, but I'm going to be good from now on. I'm going to be better than anybody else. That's good. But you're still going to die. James says, if a man keeps the whole law and offends in just one point, what's going to happen? It's as if you have transgressed all of the law. And what can you do about it? If it broke your relationship to God, how can you bring yourself back to God? You can't. There's nothing you can do. The wages of sin is death, and that's eternal separation from God. And you go to the law and you say, help me out. And the law says what? Sorry. I told you. I told you not to do that. I can't help you. The law can't help you when you sin. That's the problem with law. The law can tell you what righteousness looks like, and it can tell you you better do it. But when you've broken it one time, all the law can say is you're going to die. And I look up here, and there's a law, and it says you're going to die. And I look over here. I'm trying to find some place to go to get away from this. And I look over here, and the law says you're going to die. And I look over here, and the law says you're going to die. And I look behind me, and it says you're going to die. Everywhere I look, there's a law, and the law says you're going to die. That's Romans chapter 7. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ my Lord. Law can't help you. All law can do is convict you and condemn you. It can tell you what's right and tell you you better do it. But once you've broken it, you're on your own. Law can't help you. Sam? That's right. It's no big deal. That's right. And if Mike didn't pick it up, the comment was that the world's using the very same reasoning that Satan used on Eve whenever he said, did God say that you were going to die if you ate that beautiful fruit on that tree over there? Yeah. You know what? Let me tell you a little secret. God don't want you to be all that he is. He don't want you to know what he knows. And when you eat that tree, you're not going to die. You're going to be as smart as God is. And she looked at it and she said, you know what? That is some good looking stuff. I bet it would taste really, really good. And she couldn't sleep that night because she couldn't keep from thinking about how good that would taste. And she had everything else in the world that she could want, literally. But she couldn't get her mind off of it. Now, Paul's going to talk about that in Romans. He's going to talk about how that Satan took something that was good and he turned it into something bad. And he used something inside of me to entice me to do something that God told me not to do. And so he's going to say in Romans 7, the good that I want to do, I'm not able to do, and the evil that I hate, this I keep on doing. Boy, don't you have any felt that in your life? I mean, that's what we call bad habits. I mean, bad habits, they get a hold of you, don't they? And they're not easy to turn loose. And good habits, man, you got to fight to hang on to them, don't you? You got to discipline your body to hang on to those, don't you? Galatians chapter 3, verse 10. Somebody there? Galatians 3:10. Let me read it right quick. Galatians 3:10. All who rely on observing law are under a curse. Let's bring this lesson to this point right here. All who rely on observing law. It's got, most of our Bibles have the word D, the article D. It's not in the original text. It is true of the law of Moses, but it's also true of any law that you would use to try to justify yourself. All who rely on observing law are under a curse. Well, what's the curse? It is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. What's the curse of trying to be justified by being good enough? What's the curse of trying to be justified or be righteous by law? There's a curse. You got to do it perfectly, all the time, without one single solitary mistake. And if you can do that, then you can stand before God on the judgment day and you can say, knock, knock, let me come in, and he will open the door wide open and let you come in. Because there is no sin. There is nothing that has separated you from God. You have earned your salvation. Now, is there anybody here that wants to stand before God on that basis? Do you want to stand before God and say, I've never sinned? And let that be the basis on which you appeal to get into heaven. How far do you think you're going to get? You ain't going to make it. No way. No chance at all. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, right? And that's me. And that's you. And so, there's two ways you can be saved. One of them is by law. But if you're going to be saved by law, you need to know there's a curse associated with it. You're going to have to whip the curse. And the curse is, you can't sin one time. Cursed is he that does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. And then he concludes in the next verse by saying, clearly, no one is justified before God by law. So, one of the ways that most people are going to try to be saved is by keeping law. And you tell me how much you know the Bible and how good you are and how many times you attend church and the fact that you were baptized. And you tell me all those things. My question is, have you ever sinned? And you don't want to stand before God and brag about how good you are and what you've done. You see, I've got to take it. I don't have to. God has to take away all the hope that you have of being good enough to go to heaven before you will truly accept his plan. And he's got a plan that's so much better than yours, I promise you, it's as far apart as the east is from the west. There's no comparison. Because you see, if you're going to try to be righteous under law, the real question is, what have you done for me today? What you did yesterday didn't matter, or the whole rest of your life. If you ever make one mistake, it's all over. And you don't have any hope And law can't help you. You can cry. You can beg. You can crawl. You can plead. Law can't help. It can't help you. Law says you're going to die. Now, that's the curse of law. The problem of law is it has no cleansing ability. There's no clause in it to cleanse you. Now, can you be saved by law? The answer is no. Can you be saved under law? Well, now that puts all those folks in the Old Testament, doesn't it? Can you be saved under law? Yes, but not by law. The judge, he can help you. Can he? The law can't help you. The law's set. But the judge now, he can help you. You got this ticket for going, we've used this illustration, but I'll end with it. For going 100 miles an hour and in a 50-mile-an-hour speed zone. And you got the ticket, and you get before the judge, and the judge says, well, the law says this is going to be a big one, son. I hate to tell you, but 50 miles an hour over the speed limit, that's going to cost you lots of money. And you say, well, judge, can I say one thing? My wife was on the back seat having a baby, and I was trying to get to the hospital. And he says, oh, can he set the law aside and give you mercy when the law could not give you mercy? He can. Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Well, we'll get there, but it's still 3:21, all right? We're still working on law. Thank you. God bless you.